Boy, Bob had the most interesting factoid today. He said, if you are thinking about stretching, sometimes your ankles and feet go neglected, and yet they're so important. He said, here's a clever way to remember to stretch your feet and ankles. Sit there, extend your legs so your feet are free now, and do the alphabet. Carve out the alphabet with your toes. A, and then B. Think about all of the different motions and directions as you circle your feet around, spelling out the alphabet with them, with your feet. C, and D goes down and then around and over. Suddenly, when you get through the alphabet, your feet are nicely done. But I digress. It's time for the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN Radio. Pete Zimmerman is the producer, and that was not part of our pre-game meeting. And I'm John Williams. Our first guest is Elise Glink. Hi, Elise. Welcome back. How are you?
Hi, John. I'm good. Market's not so good today.
By the way, I hope I described it. We'll get to that in 4 seconds. I did describe that correctly. Did you get what I was saying there about how to stretch out your feet and ankles?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Been doing that since you started talking. I'm on J.
839. We're off on the Dow. We were down 429, and you wondered if this was going to be one of the days that it dips on the downside but recovers. It's still in a fall.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot going on in the market, and a lot of the bears have come out. It's sort of interesting. This morning I was watching CNBC, and they were saying, well, we're going to hear from a lot of bears over the next 72 hours talking about how we're way overdue for a pullback, and we may be. I wanted to start by reminding everybody just how much the market has gone up over the past, you know, couple of years. If you look at the Dow, which is down, you know, 850-odd points, give or take a few, over the last 5 years, the Dow is actually up 85%. Over the last year, it's up 24%. You look at the S&P 500, which are the 500 biggest companies. In the past year, it's up 31%. In the past 5 years, it's up almost 100%. And the same thing is true with the Russell 2000, which is up, I think, 45% over the past year and, 72%. Over the last 5 years. So when you look at pulling back 2% or 3% or 4%, I don't want anybody to get too nervous about that. Markets go up and markets go down. If they only ever went up, nobody would make any other investments, right?
And actually, no, never mind. That can't happen. Markets can't always go up.
There's always a buy.
Besides, there's always a buyer and a seller on every transaction, which means that in a way, the guy that sold probably wishes he'd held on to it. In a way, there's a loser in every transaction, and everybody can't always be winning, was where my brain was for a second there.
Yeah, well, you know, everybody wants to just be a big winner all the time. And if you just stand around the water cooler, whether that's, digital or an actual water cooler in your office, all you'll hear about are trading successes, right? And of course, everybody doesn't always win all the time, not even day traders, maybe especially day traders. But there's always a reason why the market goes up and down. And you and I talk about this every week, that traders trade a lot on rumors. And they trade on imagining what's going to happen because of where the government is doing. They're pulling back support or they're nervous about that. And so the bond market fluctuates many times during the day and we get stocks trading up and down. Today's rumor is about what's going to happen with this Chinese developer, real estate developer called Evergrande, which is on the brink of default. And they're looking under, they have $300 billion of debt. So that's big. And the bears in the market who are saying, well, this could just not hurt, you know, China. It could hurt everybody and it could spread beyond. But the truth is that I don't believe U.S. banks are heavily invested in Evergrande. So whatever happens to them, that's a very different kind of a system. The Chinese government is going to decide whether it's going to, you know, print some money and prop them up or not. I'm not sure it has a lot of effect on what we're doing here. So we'll just have to see. But there are certainly other things at work.
But it does have effect on us here in that my mutual fund is down today as a result of all of this, right? I mean, it's not like that. I hope the Chinese government does bail them out just because maybe that'll help my mutual fund. They can manage their economy any way they want. But look how interconnected we are, Elise.
It is. And again, everything is going on trades. And in another, 24, 48 or 72 hours by the end of the week, we may, see a complete bounce back. I'd also like to remind everybody that September tends to be the month that does. It's one of the worst trading months when you look back over 20, 30 years. in the stock market history. September, for whatever reason, is a month where things can go a little bit wonky. And so, you know, when you look too closely at your mutual fund, which of course we do, John, look at your mutual fund every single Monday, you know, you get a little bit worried about these ups and downs. But if you look over the course of the year or 5 years, mm-hmm. you can see that you're going strong and you're going to, you know, continue to invest and hit your goals. I'd also like to remind people that when you have these down days, this is a great opportunity to do something called dollar cost averaging, where month in and month out, no matter what happens, you take the money that you want to invest and you stick it into your predetermined sections and you just invest. If the market is down like it is now, you buy a little bit more for your money. If the market's up, you're making money. So this is a way to kind of take the day-to-day out of it and look longer term at where you really want to get with your investing.
I want to ask you about local real estate or domestic real estate in just a minute. We'll pause here and then come back with some of those numbers. And when we do, also just repeat for us how the various indices have performed over the last year. I think that is good to know year to date. So let's talk a little bit more about those numbers before we move on to real estate per se. Can you repeat those?
Sure. So the Dow is up, I think you wanted to know for the year. Right now it's up about almost 25% over the past year. That's phenomenal growth.
Is that year to date?
Yep. That's okay. No, it's year and exactly from September 20th of 2020, so to September 21st, a year ago till today.
Yeah, which is even more impressive. Keep going.
Right. So we've got the S&P 500, which is up from a year ago, 31.9%, almost 32%. The Russell 2000 is up 45.97%, just about 46% from a year ago. And so overall, you're looking at some pretty healthy growth. And a lot of that is, you asked me, you know, why are people trading? You know, what happens? You know, a lot of this is based on what the actual numbers are coming in. And what we're seeing is that companies are having a tremendously profitable year. The ones that are doing well, ones that are not doing well are not doing well. But there's a lot of companies out there that are doing amazingly well. One of those, Apple, which we all know, just introduced some new products today and over the last couple of days. Their revenue as of June 2020 is something like $81.5 billion. That's up 36% year over year. Net income of almost $22 billion. I mean, you're talking about numbers, John, that you and I might talk about for a government, you know, supporting the economy. And their net profit margin, 26%. So you want to know where real growth is coming from. We're seeing tremendous growth in the S&P 500 over the year because these companies that are running the S&P 500, a lot of these are tech companies, are doing very nicely.
What's happening on the real estate front with inventory and prices?
Well, that's, you know, an interesting piece of news as well. I mean, the market is very competitive because there simply are not enough houses out there. We're about 5.5 million homes short in this country. Not everywhere, not like in Chicago per se, but in other places like Boise, Idaho. We're very, very short. And so we've seen a tremendous amount of home appreciation. This is also not normal. So year over year, Zillow Home Values Index increased by almost 18% in August from a year ago. 18%. Normal home price appreciation is about 3% or just slightly above the rate of inflation. And we've seen 17% year over year. And so there's a lot of concern about affordability. You know, imagine your home goes up in value 10%, 15% a year. That's just not sustainable, even where mortgage interest rates are now sitting at rock bottom levels of about under 3% for a 30-year fixed rate loan, under 2.5% for a 15-year mortgage. And so you're seeing a lot of concern about, you know, sort of where things are going and how this is going to, you know, continue. And what you're also seeing at the same time is that builders are very nervous because even though lumber prices have come down, right, they're still having trouble finding people to build the houses with the lumber they can now afford. So there's a lot of angst in the housing market.
And is the rate of increase decreasing or are the actual prices or inventory decreasing? It's still trending up, but just slower. Or do I have that wrong?
No, I think there's, you know, there are a few more homes for sale in the marketplace. So the North Shore, just of Chicago, which we've been watching, you know, you were seeing all-time record low inventories. You know, if you would normally see 150 homes for sale in a market like Glencoe or Lake Forest, you were seeing 30 homes. Now that's inched up to like 40 homes for sale. So you're still not seeing that many homes. If you drive all over Chicago, you're not seeing that many for sale signs. You see a few more here or
that's
there,
true.
But not a lot.
Yeah. And I wonder where we are on the new home construction. I know you said builders are having trouble getting carpenters, maybe, but you would think that, man, you should be throwing up homes as fast as you can right now.
Yeah, you're just seeing, again, supply and labor constraints, right? So everything, yes, you're getting more in the way of lumber, so lumber prices are going down, but there are other pieces, components that people need, like, for example, wallboard. Yeah, you know, paint. Did you know there's a run on black paint? We may have discussed this a few months ago, but suddenly someone decided that black houses were the thing to do, so there just simply isn't quite enough black paint being made for houses right now. So things like that are causing slowdowns in construction. My neighbor's been renovating her house. It was supposed to be a six-month project. She's now finishing up her first full year, and they're still not done.
Yeah.
Getting tile coming in, it's all gotten slow. And again, the people who are around to actually do the kind of installation that you want, there aren't enough people there either. So we're just seeing a very competitive market, slightly slowing down in terms of, you know, the numbers of homes that are being sold. That's good news for buyers, but you're also seeing buyers back out of the market because things are so expensive.
Hey, I got a real estate tip. Don't paint your house black, everybody. That may be a popular cut. The front door, yes. Some trim, maybe, but don't paint your house black. It's not going to stand well. It's not 4 years, 8 years, 12 years from now, people are going to go, well, I don't want to buy a black house. That's just a real estate tip from John Williams. And it might not be a good one. That's just where my head is today.
White houses always sell no matter what the market.
Yeah. Elise Glink, find out more at thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. Remember, she's also got a book, 100 Questions Every First-Time Home Buyer Should Ask. Okay, Elise, thank you.
Talk to you soon.
Thanks for dialing in. This is John Williams. Some strange stories in this half hour, including cookie-scented sandals. What is the viability of that? And how about the viability of this idea? Here's Jim Dahlke joining us, the senior editor at Chicago Inno. Hey, Jim, welcome to the show.
Hey, John, thanks for having me. Great to be here.
Not that this is the same as or as viable or not as cookie-scented sandals, but I'm very intrigued by what Ryan Mundy has come up with, the former NFL player. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, Ryan Mundy, the former defensive back, played his last game for the Chicago Bears back in 2015. And he has transitioned into the startup world, and his latest venture is called Alchemy. He told me that this company really wants to be, quote, the Peloton for black mental health. Essentially, it's a platform where folks can pay a monthly subscription fee to get access to professionals to help them with their psychological help. So essentially what the company does is it connects folks to professionals in psychology, mindfulness, and wellness, specifically focused on the black experience and the black community. So folks can find resources on systemic racism and anxiety and microaggressions. The platform is going to officially launch in November, and Ryan has raised over $4 million for this startup from some interesting investors, including folks locally, including M25 and KB Partners.
Hmm. Well, before we talk about the content, just talk to me about how the platform would work. If it's Peloton, I'm watching a video. And by the way, some of the Peloton instructors are very positive, pro mindfulness and energy. Is it somebody talking to me and I'm watching a video, or is it a one-on-one live communication?
Yeah, so it's not one-on-one, so they don't do that yet. So this is definitely more kind of connecting with videos, both live and on demand.
Right.
So you can search for different courses, but also, you know, sort of connect with classes in real time. So the platform features mental health courses that offer well-being techniques, guided meditation sessions, and like I said, live sessions where you just can interact with the mental health care professionals and sort of other guest speakers in real time.
But you know, I'm just thinking, because when you go on a Peloton, this is what he's modeling himself after for black mental health, You will sometimes watch pre-recorded sessions, and then you watch a tape of somebody riding the bike and encouraging you to ride the bike and tell funny stories or whatever. If I could dial into something like that every day, that wasn't telling me to exercise, but just think, feel, and be positive, be mentally fit and healthy, I'm getting so much of the opposite of that these days. Maybe that's a viable concept, right?
That's right. And, you know, Ryan told me that this is all about accessibility. I mean, this the price point of $14 a month, a lot more affordable than what you would get from, you know, a traditional therapy experience. And, he said that there's just not a lot out there for, you know, for the Black experience, for the Black community, a piece of technology, a platform suited specifically for folks with those needs. And so really, really interesting company. And like I mentioned, raised $4.6 million. Forerunner Ventures, a San Francisco-based VC firm, is their lead backer. They are known for backing high-growth consumer startups like Warby Parker and Dollar Shave Club.
Wow. Well, that's a nice background, and maybe this is a question for him, but then I wonder how he shapes his message for Blacks as opposed to others. Is it the topics or the vocabulary or the language? I wonder how it is a Black experience rather than something else.
Yeah, it sounds like the topics at first. So, I mean, the content is going to center around intergenerational trauma and, microaggressions in the workplace and anxiety that, you know, that the Black people in America typically face. So the content itself is going to be focused on the Black experience.
Looking for a healthier sweet treat? Meet vegan gelato startup Sacred Serve. This is your story. What have you got here?
Yeah, so Sacred Serve, a new Chicago startup local, they've created a vegan gelato brand, a really interesting company. They really caught on, actually, at Whole Foods. They're in Whole Foods locations all across the Midwest. Earlier this year, actually, they were named a regional supplier of the year at Whole Foods. They've created a really interesting vegan product here. Their base is made with organic coconut meat instead of dairy, and that coconut meat actually contains half the calories and fat of coconut milk, which a lot of their competitors are made with. And their product actually has a lot of flavors that you typically wouldn't find in gelato: maca root, cacao, matcha green tea, and mushrooms and saffron. It's sweetened with coconut sugar. So really interesting company here out of Chicago, raised about $1 million in funding. A fun thing about them, too, is they actually have a 100% recyclable and plastic-free carton, which they say is actually a first for the industry. So an interesting Chicago company kind of innovating within the frozen food aisle.
I hope those flavors work for them. They don't. Would a mint chip or cookie dough kill them?
You know, so their flavors that they have include are a matcha mint chip, cookies and cream, saffron chai spice, coconut salted caramel. So some familiar flavors, but, mm-hmm. Also some flavors a little outside the box as well.
One more. Talk to me about Infusion.
Yeah, Infusion, the latest Chicago tech firm to announce plans to go public. So just on Friday, they filed with the SEC. It plans to raise about $100 million in an IPO. This is a Chicago startup that just earlier this year raised at a $1.5 billion valuation. So one of Chicago's latest unicorn firms heading for the public markets. They were founded in 1995. They're a fintech company that makes investment management software. Our customers include a lot of hedge funds and family offices. So they've grown to more than 600 employees across the country, and really a lot of growth from Infusion as they hit the public market soon.
Jim Dahlke is the senior editor at Chicago Inno. We'll talk again next week. Thank you, Jim.
Thanks, John.
Markets are taking a beating today. The Dow's off almost 750 points. An update on that in just a minute. First, a little more business news. This is Dave Schwann.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. United Airlines CEO Scott Kirby blames the Delta variant of the coronavirus for a downturn in travel. Speaking on CBS's Face the Nation, Kirby says the recovery for travel demand has been pushed to January of next year because of the ongoing pandemic. The price at the pump is up around Chicago. Gas Buddy says prices have risen over 3.5 cents a gallon in the past week. Average price, $3.55 per gallon, over 4 cents a gallon higher than a month ago and over $1.15 higher than a year ago. The strike is over for workers at Nabisco. 325 workers at the Marquette Park plant and 20 at a distribution site in Addison have been on strike since last month over wages, work schedules, and 401k accounts. Chips Ahoy cookies and Wheat Thins are among the items made here. I'm Dave Schwann, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Business of Food Time and Steve Alexander.
Yeah, no, just Apple just released its iOS 15 update, and mine just finished. Took about 10 or 12 minutes, so there you go. You were having fun earlier with the iconic commercial jingles, Johnny.
Mm-hmm.
If you are of a certain age, you'll remember this one.
Hey, how about a nice Hawaiian punch?
I'll get into that in a couple of minutes, but let's begin with something serious. It's the beginning of National Farm Safety Week, and I'll be pounding that drum these next few days. And for good reason.
The latest data from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics shows that the agriculture sector is still the most dangerous in America.
Says Krista Lisser, the public information officer for the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
Each year, the farming profession sees 573 fatalities, which equals 23 deaths per 100,000 workers.
And these next few weeks, danger is at its highest.
It is harvest season. It is one of the busiest times for our farmers. You're going to see more slow-moving vehicles out on the roadways. And you're just going to see a general stressful situation for our farmers as well.
Stressful, like when a speeding car is coming at your combine on a dark country road. It happened last Wednesday night south of Morton, Illinois, and I mentioned this on Friday, but there's more information now. A 45-year-old Morton man was at the wheel of his car when it crossed the center line and clipped the front of a combine. The farmer driving the combine told police he was already driving on the shoulder to let traffic behind him pass, but this car was coming at him fast. He estimates 80 miles an hour when they collided. The car spun into a field and caught fire. That's where the driver died. The combine driver, a longtime local farmer, was not injured. But these country crashes often involve people who know each other. I don't know if that's the case in this one, but farmers and drivers, be careful out there.
I think our farmers are a little more hypersensitive to the issue of roadway safety. But again, for our farmers, keeping, you know, your hazard lights on your combine and other things like that, that will draw attention to you while you're on the road for other motorists.
Krista Lisser of the Illinois Department of Agriculture. Chicago Board of Trade, stronger dollar today is causing some problems on the export market. And soybeans right now are down about 19 cents at make that 12.64 per bushel. Corn is at 5.21 a bushel, down about a nickel, and wheat right now is down about 9 cents per bushel. From the farm to your belly, today is National Fried Rice Day. It's National Pepperoni Pizza Day. It's National String Cheese Day. National Punch Day.
Hey, how about a nice Hawaiian punch?
That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Amy Guth joins us on the Wintrust Business Lunch. I have questions about sandals. Okay.
I do too.
Okay, you're up.
Yeah, I also have questions about this. So Ad Age reported that Mondelez, who is the maker of Oreos, they have entered a partner with a Brazilian flip-flop brand. I think I'm saying it correctly. Havaianas, I think, maybe. Yeah. Anyway, they're teamed up, and they're creating an Oreo flip-flop that includes chocolate-scented straps. So your feet will smell like Oreos. I have no idea why you would want your feet to smell like Oreos, but if you are a big Oreos fan, I'm sure there's a wonderful reason. So in this line of this partnership, they're also doing an Oreo-shaped earphone case and also Oreo-printed socks.
I get the socks, and the earphone case is kind of clever.
Yes,
sandals
totally.
That make your feet smell like Oreos. Are they coming out with flavors or other tastes?
As far as I know, it's just the Oreo. I mean, I immediately, right, you can think of, well, do I want like Dorito feet or, you know, like all the different things, you know, you can make your feet smell like, but they're starting with Oreos for now. I mean, if you are an Oreo fan, it's like a cute sandal. It's got like a little blue kind of strap. It looks like a regular flip-flop if you've got your foot in it. Once you take your foot out, you can see kind of these little Oreos on the bottom of them, and they also smell like chocolate.
Okay, so then how do I get these things or not get these things? I guess you just Google online, Havaianas, Havaianas.
That's exactly right. And they're having a lot of fun with it on social media, too. So if you follow either of those brands, Oreo or Havaianas, on Twitter or Facebook or Instagram, they're being kind of playful with the rollout. So there's some kind of fun social around there, too.
Interestingly, I understand Oreos is now coming up with a cookie that tastes like sandals. So,
kind of give and pass.
Talk to me about, speaking of food, the fake meat market's latest. What are you looking at here?
Yeah, so Archer Daniels Midland, they plan to launch their first plant-based U.S. portfolio. They talked with Bloomberg about this, and they're entering through the Plant Plus Foods, which is already a joint venture of a Brazilian beef producer called Marfrig Global, and they're working on that. So this is kind of, they're jumping into that pool with this Plant Plus Foods joint venture to create some new products. What I thought was really interesting about this, they've already done some things in the South American market, but they said, what we're going to do is we're not going to do the veggie burgers and the meatballs and the things that a lot of plant-based meat alternatives are doing already. We're going to go for very different things. A lot of those details are not clear yet about exactly what does that mean they're going to do, but they're going to do retail, but they're also going to focus on restaurant menus and food service. They have this vision, they said, of being able to, have a meat-free alternative to everything on a restaurant menu, which I thought was really interesting. The head of the nutrition unit at ADM was talking to Bloomberg about this kind of this vision of this strategy of doing this very differently than a lot of the other producers are going to do. So we'll be watching that to see exactly what Archer Daniels Midland does there in terms of what are these alternatives that they're going to come out with that aren't the veggie burger or the meatball.
You follow the travel industry pretty closely. Talk to me about travel restrictions these days.
Yeah, so the White House announced earlier today that they're going to ease travel restrictions for foreign visitors to the U.S. who are vaccinated. So immediately we saw some reaction, despite everything, a lot of eyes are on Wall Street today, and despite all those numbers, a lot of them in the red, we did see some reaction from airlines a little bit earlier, particularly European airlines, on that news. So essentially, if someone is visiting this country from Europe and they can prove they're vaccinated, great. Now, there's still some question of unvaccinated Americans who are living or working abroad. So they're going to change a little bit of the restrictions there. I believe they're going to be tightened up is what it sounds like they're going to be. They're going to be tightened up a little bit, so it might be harder for an unvaccinated American living abroad to come home to visit. It appears what they're going to do, and again, this is all going to be made official with more details come out. But you have to test before you leave, before you board that U.S.-bound flight, and then test again once you arrive.
Really?
To make sure you're not bringing COVID. But that's a big news. I mean, that's really big news for airlines. And we've seen a lot of domestic airlines here using increasingly bigger planes because they don't want to have, they'd rather have just one or two big planes in the air than five or six smaller ones. If we start seeing European travel picking up, which I'm sure it will if this is the case, a lot of U.S. carriers do some of the connecting flights for some of the European carriers. So it's a lot of really good news for airlines who are really kind of hoping for a return. We saw travel kind of taper off again as the Delta variant started to surge. So this would be a very important big step for returning travel levels. This is supposed to start early November, so this would be affecting the holiday travel season.
We should spend some time on another segment maybe talking about the flip of that, and that is, what is it like for Americans that are traveling abroad? I know that in 3 weeks I'm traveling to Amsterdam. We're flying with a group courtesy of Kelly Cruises and a bunch of WGN listeners. We're doing a Rhine River trip. Long time plan. Boy, we thought it was going to be great. We went to phase five. Now you're in this Delta stage, and so you wonder about it all. Anyway, they said that you have to have a negative COVID test 48 hours before you board the plane, which puts a real premium on the quick turnaround of those results, because you can't get it 3 days before. You have to get it 2 days before. You have to have positive results, negative test results in your hand before you get on the plane. I don't think we're getting tested when we get off, though, Amy. I think it's just when we get on.
So yeah. And part of it was kind of that pushback of, hey, Europe was kind of going, hey, we're allowing Americans in. Why aren't you allowing Europeans into the U.S.? So I think this is kind of leveling that out a bit.
Makes sense to me. And it's funny, too, because the rules change back and forth on an almost weekly basis. But that's the latest good news for us. And you and I will talk about that another day. Thank you, Amy.
Thanks so much, John.